Okay, let's go. Thanks. Welcome, everyone. I will open the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. Apologize for the delay. I know that we have a number of people here who have come from a good distance to testify on our bills today. I'm going to do things a little unusually to accommodate a colleague here. I'm going to open a public hearing on both Senate Bill 1541 and 1534 and invite Senator Thompson up to speak on both of these. Before you start, we will summarize briefly the bills.
Well, Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1541 is basically an extension of the sunset on a previous tax credit for crop donation. It essentially would increase the percentage of the wholesale price that's allowed for the amount of credit, and as written in the bill right now, it's at 15% of the value of the wholesale price of the food that would be donated. That's okay. What the bill is.
All right, and we'll wait for the summary on 1534 until we get into the rest of the hearing. So welcome, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Yes, I'm here today to speak to Senate Bill 1541, which is a 15% tax credit for crop and vegetable and meat donations, food donations to the food bank. And I have a very esteemed co-chair on this measure. I'm glad to have her on this. There used to be a 10% tax credit for this, and it sunsetted and went away in 2011. And what we found was, and especially now that the Farm Bill has passed, is passing, there's been a huge cut to the SNAP program, and so there's going to be an even greater deficit and a greater need to feed our hungry here in Oregon, and fresh fruits, vegetables, and meats to get that in the hands of the food bank to distribute statewide to all our hungry citizens out there. We think it's very important to bring this tax credit back. At 10%, it wasn't used very often, and we're trying to provide more incentive to get those products to the food bank, and we believe that 15% will do that, and we're you will hear from the panel later on the specifics of that, and hope you support that. Thank you.
Thank you. Now you want to address the other bill?
That would be great.
Okay. Senate Bill 1534, we're open in a public hearing for that.
Okay. 1534, Senator Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Senate Bill 34 is a fix to something that we kind of did, the state did kind of unknowingly. There's always, for a long time, been agreement between the state of Washington.
Senator Thompson, if I could interrupt you briefly.
Yes.
I believe this is an amendment.
Yes, it is. It's an amendment. Yes. I'm sorry. And the folks that have done the heavy lifting on this bill will be able to describe it probably much better than I am. I'll describe it as it happens to us senators when you find out on a Thursday, the weekend before we start session, that the state of Washington sent a bill to the Port of Hood River for about $1 million, and I'm not sure what the amount was to the Bridge of Cascade Locks, but there used to be an agreement between the states that they wouldn't tax each other on bridge structures, toll booths, those kind of things between the states, and when they went in to do some work to kind of fix up the statute to get ready to do the CRC projects, that got omitted. And so the state of Washington Department of Revenue sent a bill to these entities, and they just received it like in the middle of December. And so this is a fix for that, and the folks that are ODOT and a whole bunch of people did a lot of great work and worked together, and those folks will come up and tell you more of the specifics, but it's something we've always done. It was just kind of a misstep when they cleaned up some statutes.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Are there any, you're done?
Yes, I'm done.
Are there any questions before we send you back to your constituents? OK. Okay, no questions.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534 and continue with our public hearing on Senate Bill 1541. We have signed up here one, two, three, four people. Helly Rudenklan, Jennifer Clems, Ginger Rapport, and Kirk Hutchinson. So if we can come on, bring them forward here. And we can probably nab another chair, or somebody can sit back and wait till somebody else finishes testifying.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Helle Rattenclaw. My husband and I farm out about 1,000 acres on the county line between Polk and Yamhill counties. We've been farming for 22 years now. Probably the last 5 years we finally felt like we are at a position where we feel confident we're probably not going to go broke. But it's taken us that long to get up to that point. One of the things we did was we ended up getting some irrigated ground available, and we have diversified our production, and we now include green beans and sweet corn that we grow for National Frozen Foods out of Albany. Our experience with the Oregon Food Bank started back in 2009. Sometimes when you plant for a company like National Frozen Foods, they try to line up production so that about 50 acres of beans will be ready for the processing plant every day.
You could step back from the microphone a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
It's very sensitive.
Okay. And sometimes what happens is that certain environmental conditions come into play, and you have a lot of crop that's suddenly ready at one time. That happened to us. The company can't handle it all, and so they said, we will only take 5 ton per acre of your field. They came out and harvested that and then left the rest. It's called a bypass, and it happens sometimes. We didn't like to see that. We had some acres of beans out there that were perfectly fine and no place to go with them. So we called everybody we could think of, all our friends and neighbors, and the local gleaners, and also the YCAP, the local food bank out of Yamhill County. And they sent out a crew, as many as they could, and they were able to salvage quite a bit of those beans. They were able to get them in and use them, and we're really pleased with that. That experience, we haven't had a field bypass since then, but that experience got us kind of thinking about, well, what can we do to maybe help get some of our fresh produce into the hands of people in Oregon who are hungry. The other thing is, there's a group called Farmers Ending Hunger. The executive director is John Burt, and that's a group of farmers that have gotten together. Once they heard about the problem of hunger in Oregon, and especially the children, they have gotten together and in a very deliberate way try to get some of the fresh produce from Oregon farmers into the food banks. Again, I'd followed that story and was interested in it, wasn't sure quite how we would do it. Finally, 2 years ago, I called the company National Frozen Foods before harvest and asked if it was okay if we diverted part of our crop to the local food bank. And we need to get permission because we grow under contract with them, so we're supposed to deliver all our crop to them. They were kind enough to say yes, they were happy to work with us on that and have been very, very helpful. So I took our farm truck down to the field, and there's some pictures that I included with my thing here, yeah. So that's pulling into the fields, what it looked like. There were about four pickers working out there, and I just pulled in with a farm truck, and one of those pickers came over with their dump tank thing and unloaded about a third of a dump or so into my farm truck. And then I took that into McMinnville, that's the next page, and brought it to the food bank. They didn't know it was coming. They then had a little bit of trouble getting it from the back of the farm truck into a way that they could use. It was hard to unload into those cardboard boxes from the back of the truck. So a couple of months later, on the next picture, our sweet corn crop was ready. And at this point, I called John Burt, and he said, well, we have some crates at the Oregon Food Bank that we can deliver out to the Yamhill County Food Bank and go pick those up and put them on the back of a trailer that might work better. So that's what we did for the sweet corn that year, and that worked much better. They were able to just take it with a forklift and unload it directly into their facility. So it's 2012. Again, this 2013, the next pictures of the green beans that we did this year. it's a little bit of a messy process, but it works. They got the beans delivered, and then they distributed it on from there. And the last two pages was the sweet corn this year. At this point, we had just gotten dumped on a really heavy rain shower, so the field was pretty muddy, but we got it done. That picture that has the corn picker in it, up at the top right corner, you can see a truck and trailer. That's actually ours. That's how we normally would handle these ag commodities, is in big semi-truck and trailers. So having it on a back of a pickup trailer with some boxes is it's not as efficient, but it works because that's a way that the food bank can handle it and get it in. I'm really proud of what we're doing. It's something that we can do to help out. It gets some of that fresh vegetables directly to the food bank, and they can distribute it out in a way that hopefully is useful and good for people. It's a shame that that's a process that there's a need for it, but that's the way it is at the moment. My hope then is that the Oregon legislature would kind of help us out a little bit with this. I believe the crop donation tax credit should be reinstated. We have the cost of raising the crop just for seed, fertilizer, chemical. That's easily $500 an acre. Then we take part of that crop away so we don't get income for it. And finally, we have kind of time and effort and a little bit of cost associated with trying to figure out how to get that from the field and to the YCAP. And it'd be nice if we could get help with a little bit, recoup a little bit of those costs. But more so, my last paragraph, I think there's a different message. And I would like to think that the legislature will kind of acknowledge what the farmers in Oregon are already doing. And I believe farmers will help their fellow Oregonians as much as we can. But it'd be nice with a tax credit, makes it more of a partnership between the state and farmers, and to show that we're all working on this project together.
So, thank you for coming, and thank you for the pictures. A picture is sometimes worth 1,000 words. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Jennifer Clemo with Community Food for Crestwell and the Crestwell Food Pantry. We're a partner of Fooder Lane County. In our community, 29% of the population qualifies for food assistance. And a lot of people find that at the end of the month, their ends just aren't meeting. Our pantry can provide these community members with a 3 to 5 day supply of food, but we find that a lot of people are still finding gaps and they're still hungry. The customers of the Crestwell Food Pantry can only shop at the pantry once a month, but we can provide them with fresh fruit and produce and bread weekly. So we actually see a lot of our customers returning to the pantry every week. Although they can't do full shopping, they do take advantage of the produce and the bread. It means a lot to them. Our produce comes primarily from Food for Lane County, but we also receive produce from the local farmers market, some local producers, gardeners, and growers, both individuals as well as small production producers in our community. And I want to tell you specifically about one man, Mr. Bosch, who last year provided 5,000 pounds of produce for our community. Now, we serve about 175 families a month. That's families, not individuals. So for us, that's a lot of produce. And it's very meaningful to our pantry. And Mr. Bosch has described to us that he would like to be able to give us more produce, but he can't afford to harvest it. He actually has acres of produce, pears specifically, and some other items that sit and spoil in the field because he can't afford to harvest it to donate it to our pantry. And he's also expressed that he would love to be able to plant more produce specifically for donation to the pantry, but he can't afford the seeds and the seedlings. So we believe that a crop donation tax credit would help Mr. Bosch and others be able to harvest more produce for our local pantry, but would also help him in buying the seeds and seedlings that it would take for him to do more production and increase that production specifically in support of our pantry. The produce and These items, they really mean a lot to the people in our community who find themselves hungry throughout the month and who are not sustained solely on the food benefits they receive in the food boxes. And these are very nutritious staples that they need. So it's very important to our community and to our clients that we can continue to provide produce and that we get as much of it as we can because it's gone every single week. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ginger Rapport, and it gives me great pleasure to say that I am starting my 19th season as the manager for the Beaverton Farmers Market. Beaverton is the largest market in the state. We will get about 20,000 customers through the market every day, and we work closely with the Tualatin Valley Gleaners. They are a partner organization of the food bank, and on average, they collect about 1,500 pounds of food from my farmers every Saturday, and that's fresh, top-quality produce. That food will go to feed about 220 families. These are statistics from last year. I expect this will be greater this year, but last year, they fed about 220 families a week. That's about 1,000 people a week getting fresh produce from the market. At my market alone, the gleaners collect about 16,000 pounds of food over the course of the year. And as you know, small family farms are struggling as it is, and anything that we can do to help support their success is important. And I encourage you on behalf of all my small family farms to support this tax credit.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We have Kirk Hutchison signed up for Future Farmers.
Senator Burdick and the committee, I would hope that
yes, come on, come on, come on.
Beautiful assistants could take care and present for me. Go ahead. Thank you. We have some posters. Is it okay if they show them?
Yeah, we need you to sit down with a microphone, though, for our record, and identify yourself for the record.
Kirk Hutchinson with Food for All.
Thank you. All right. My name is Alicia Regine, and Food for All started in 1998 with a 1,000-pound donation of potatoes from Kettle Chips. And since then, Food for All has grown so that in 2013, we had 9 schools participating and 320,000 pounds of food donated to hungry families in Oregon. There are 3 main parts of Food for All: collection, packaging, and distribution.
My name is Bailey Heidi. The first part of the process is the collection process, and it starts with students drafting letters to farmers and producers that may possibly donate to Food for All. Then a personal visit is set up with the farmers, like Amstead Produce, Montecuco Farms, Easy Orchards, and many, many others, to discuss what we'll be able to donate or what they will be able to donate. Over 20 farmers have participated in our program, and next arrangements are made with the grower and the trucking companies to transport the food to the schools for the packaging process.
Alicia Regine. The packaging starts at the schools, which we have several schools involved, such as Willamina, Amity, Yamhill-Carlton, Sheridan, Pendleton, Echo, Union, Dayton, and Perrydale. At Perrydale, all students kindergarten through 12th grade are involved in our process of packaging, and the older, more experienced kids will help palletize the food that the younger kids may have helped with, and anyone 18 or older can get their forklift certification to help load the food onto the trucks. And after all the food is packaged and loaded, we will then send it off for distribution.
Good afternoon. I'm Caitlin Moran. In the distribution process, we get together some FFA kids who want to follow around semi-trucks around Oregon to drop off food. We work with our partners to learn where to drop this food off. We take the produce to some places, some of our partners are the Knights of Columbus in Coos Bay, Dream 2 in Salem, Dallas Christmas Cheer in Dallas, and the Salvation Army. Food for All relies on farmers to provide the high quality nutritious fresh food so that thousands of Oregonians can improve their diet and make it more balanced. In partnering with producers and schools and service organizations, we have donated over millions of pounds of food and proven model works. Please support Senate Bill 1541.
Thank you.
This is
a great presentation.
Thank you.
And so Food for All has the same acronym as Future Farmers of America. Are you a branch of Future Farmers of America?
We're from Paradell FFA, so yes, we're in FFA.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Are there questions for this panel? Thank you very much. You were very well presented.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We also have we also have support from Roger Beyer from the Oregon Blueberry Commission and the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. And I would remind you, committee, we had an extensive hearing on this tax credit bill during our legislative days. And so there's probably manyfold the amount of supporters as we have in this room. But I ask that we have a limited panel this time since we'd had the more extensive panel earlier. So there's a lot of support for this bill that is not here today at my request. So do we have anybody else who would like to testify? Okay, thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1541, and we will be bringing this bill back before the committee probably on Monday. Okay, now we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1534 is what has been described mostly as a technical fix bill. And there are three amendments to the bill, a dash one, a dash four, and a dash five, that are or should be in OLIS. And I've also put together a summary sheet.
It's under meeting materials.
Under meeting materials, called Senate Bill 1534 and amendments. So, Madam Chair, I could either walk through pieces of this. The what I've taken here on this sheet is there's a table for the introduced bill and each of the three amendments, and trying to describe very briefly what those amendments do.
Yeah, please do. Oh, here we go. I had trouble getting into it. So, yes, please proceed.
Okay, so the introduced bill has five sections. The first one deals with the medical subtraction. There are just two technical fixes there. There's an IRC reference that was incorrect, and that gets fixed. And as you recall, the medical subtraction phases out as income increases from $1,800 to $1,400 to $1,000. For the $1,000 level, there's a no man's land with respect to the income level where people at either $100,000 or $200,000 aren't affected. It's a less than or equal to. It's a math thing. That gets corrected. The second item pertains to the IC disc. The way the law currently reads is that the 2.5% tax applies to all IC discs. The intent was that it would only apply to those formed before January 1 of 2014, so it clarifies that. The cigarette tax piece clarifies that directs certain revenue to the general fund, which was the intent. There was just a subsection reference missing, an internal reference missing. The Section 4 is the non-passive income, and there's some language in here referring to day-to-day operations that is being deleted, because that is not consistent with the federal concept of material participation. So deleting that language more aligns the concepts. And we'll come back to the material participation in one of the other amendments. And then the fifth piece of the introduced bill, the fifth section, is a waiver of penalty and interest. there were certain provisions, as the committee is aware, that raised taxes, and this waiver is standard language when the legislature raises taxes in the middle of a tax year, that any penalty or interest that is due because of those changes, the DOR is has the authority to waive that penalty and interest. And because of the tax change that occurred in October, that possibility exists. The way it was drafted was that waiver was unlimited. This limits it to tax year 2013, which is the only year that the situation could arise. So that's the main bill. The Dash 1 amendment you heard Senator Thompson talk about. The Dash 4 are technical provisions related to the special session bill. The first piece there, the IC disc, there are a number of asymmetries related to the three provisions for the IC disc. As the committee recalls, there's a 2.5% tax on the well, let me back up a little bit. A taxpayer, an exporter, will make commission payments to an IC disc. And under the new provisions of law, that those payments will be, the taxpayer will be allowed to deduct those payments. The IC disc will be required to pay a 2.5% tax on those commission payments. And then when the dividend payments go back from the IC disc to the exporter, there's a subtraction allowed. There were a number of cases where the timing of the provisions weren't in sync, where either the tax would be applied to the IC disc, but the deduction wasn't allowed, for example. And this just aligns all of these pieces to clarify that the policy intent is that all three of these provisions are applicable or none of them is applicable. So the deduction and subtraction are allowed only if the tax is paid, and the tax is imposed only if the deduction and subtraction are allowed for all relevant parties.
Okay.
And then the next three pieces relate to the non-passive income piece. We include language that specifically ties material participation to the IRC, Section 469. It clarifies that the preferential rates are applicable to the Oregon-sourced income. And as the bill was drafted, it was kind of an opt-out program where the base case in law taxpayers would calculate their normal taxes and it would include the preferential rate as though they claimed it. But then they had the option of not participating in the program, which is a little reverse from how we would normally think about it, where you would have the normal case where they didn't participate in the program, but at the taxpayer's option, they can participate in the program. So the effect on the taxpayers is none. It's just
so
the way...
This makes it an opt-in rather than an opt-out?
Yes, Madam Chair.
For the new...
Right.
Okay.
And that makes certain communications for the Department of Revenue easier in right. terms of setting up the base system.
Well, and we certainly thought that was the case when we right. when we did it. Okay.
So that's the Dash 4. The Dash 5 is a policy piece, and it reinstates the tax credits for a handicapped child or a severe disability of the taxpayer. Those tax credits are extra personal exemption credits that taxpayers get if they meet those criteria, and those were part of those are eliminated at the $100,000 and $200,000 level when the personal exemption credit in general was eliminated. This reinstates just those two credits, the credit for handicapped child or the severe disability.
And then remind me, under the earlier change to this where it basically phased out at a much higher income level, this also phased out at that higher income level, correct?
Madam Chair, this version does not. It was a phase down, so they would get about a third of the credit. So under current law, or not under current law, under prior to the special session, rather than getting a roughly $180 credit, they would get about a $60 credit.
Okay.
The way the Dash 5 is currently drafted is they would get the full $180 credit.
Okay.
So they're a little bit, yeah, so, they get more than they did before.
So for this population, they're actually better off than they were under
for
the
these
current law, under existing law before this. Okay.
And one last technical piece on this, the Dash 5, these are applicable to tax years 2013 and moving forward. And as you know, people are starting to file their 2013 tax returns. So one potential issue for the committee to consider is that before this could become law, taxpayers to take advantage of these extra credits would have to file an amended return, or they filed an extension, and then they'll take advantage of the credit when they file the return in October.
Because that's because we can't put an emergency clause on it. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. This cannot become law before the April 15th of this year.
Unfortunate. That was one of the arguments for annual sessions, is that we could catch these tweaks before people filed their taxes. But in this case, because it is a tax policy bill, we can't put it into effect right away. Okay, anything else, Chris?
That was a very quick walkthrough.
Okay, and then Senator Hess.
Is there an actual revenue impact statement or filing? Or?
The only piece that would have a revenue impact is the Dash 5, mm-hmm. And that's the handicapped child and severe disability tax credit. And that's on the neighborhood, I think, of about, right now, I'm still working on it. It's preliminary, about $500,000 a biennium.
Okay. We only have one person to testify for the Dash 1 amendment, and that is Mark Landauer.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. Senator Thompson did a fine job presenting the Dash 1 amendment, and I'm speaking in favor of that amendment. Just to add a little context and history here, since the late 1940s, we're talking about two bridges today. The Bridge of the Gods, which is located in Cascade Locks and owned by the Port of Cascade Locks, as well as the White Salmon Bridge, which is located in Hood River and is owned by the Port of Hood River. Since the late 1940s, both those bridges have been exempt to taxation due to laws enacted by both the states of Washington and Oregon. Those two laws in both states worked in tandem, essentially meaning that Washington would exempt Oregon bridges from taxation if we reciprocated. However, during the 2000 legislative session, the Oregon Department of Transportation, in an effort to update the tolling statutes of the state of Oregon, inadvertently repealed that reciprocal clause in the state of Oregon. And you'll find that actually in Section 19. I provided a copy, I believe, of the bill, and I've highlighted that particular section. It was ORS 381-820. When that section was repealed, it became effective in January 1 of 2008. At that point, subjected those two bridges to potential taxation by the state of Washington. In December of last year, just 2 short months ago, both ports received a letter from the state of Washington's Department of Revenue, notifying those two ports who own the two bridges that they would be conducting an excise tax audit to determine any business and occupation, public utility, sales, and use taxes that those two ports may owe as a result of Oregon repealing their reciprocal statute. The Dash 1 amendment seeks to reinstate the language that was repealed back in 2007, and the second part of the amendment, Section 7 there, would make it retroactive back to January 1, 2008, thereby effectively making the statute appear at least as though it had never been repealed. Just yesterday, the state of Washington's Department of Revenue issued a letter to the Department of Transportation telling the Department of Transportation that if this language is in fact adopted by this legislature during this session, they will consider the issue completed and will no longer pursue their efforts to conduct an audit of the two ports. I certainly hope that the committee looks favorably upon this this proposed amendment. Clearly, those two ports were not anticipating receiving a letter such as this, and I would suggest that they would be none too pleased if they end up having to write a check to our neighbors to the north. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today.
Thank you. This would seem to have nothing to do with, you know, the issues around the Columbia River crossing. Do you have any idea how it got deleted in the first place?
Madam Chair, I certainly can't speak for the Department of Transportation who requested the bill back in 2007. I suspect that it was either A, a simple oversight, or B, they didn't frankly know that this legislation this statute had been in place for quite some time and didn't really frankly know the purpose of it. And as legislative counsel has done in the past, they have repealed statutes that are no longer necessary. So that's at least the story that I've received.
And we have other bridges where Oregon could go after Washington, if this reciprocity were not in effect?
Well, actually, I did receive some additional information from Oregon's Department of Transportation. There are, in fact, I believe, 9 bridges crossing from the state of Oregon over a river, I might add. That is one of the key parts of this amendment, so I assume that would be the Columbia River. There are 9 bridges. Seven of those 9 bridges are jointly owned by the states of Washington and Oregon. Therefore, those bridges are not subject potentially to taxation. It's the fact that these two bridges are owned by the ports themselves that apparently have caused this little snafu.
Okay. Senator George.
I was wondering if we shouldn't write a letter to the state of Washington advising that they have too much copious spare time in their Department of Revenue. Because this is kind of ridiculous. They could have called us and said, hey, did you know you?
I didn't
just
hear
a point.
Question there.
Who funds it? Who up there has the time to find this?
Well, it did take them,
it took them six years.
But still, my goodness.
But they did find it. So
they did indeed.
Got to trim the fat.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Any other questions from the committee or statements?
No, sorry. That wasn't really a question.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our last sign up. Is there anybody else who wanted to talk about the bill or any of the amendments? Okay. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1534. And we'll be bringing this bill back next week. And thank you very much. Now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1535. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is, if there is a theme for today, it's errors and omissions. I guess this...
That sounds like the title of a Woody Allen movie.
Yeah, Wednesday in the special session. Well, it's a regular session. Senate Bill 1535 goes under that title. It seems like... in the previous session, there was a bill that House Bill 2140 that changed some of the statutes with the investment pools and so on for the state treasurer, and that involved the funds for local governments and the investment of those. And I think after looking into these changes, the Senate Bill 1535 attempts to fix some of the issues that came inadvertently because of that bill.
Okay, we have representatives of the Treasurer's Office who would like to speak, I think.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio from the State Treasurer's Office. I come to you with Senate Bill 1535, which bears our endorsement. Last session, as staff noted, House Bill 2140 and, in fact, Senate Bill 351 made changes, particularly additions to eligible participants in the some of our pooled funds, the Local Government Investment Pool and the Oregon Intermediate Term Pool. And although the Treasury was neutral on both of those bills, I'd like to put on record that Ted Wheeler, as a former county executive, is very keen on seeing these policies move forward. And as Treasury is working on those changes to our programs during the interim, we encountered some ambiguities in statute, some references that we felt bore some correction this session. And I want to state for the record that we don't anticipate that this bill is going to change any current practices whatsoever, with the notable exception that we will continue working on implementing the bills from last session, 2140 and 351. But the bill solves a couple of issues. Firstly, like I mentioned, there were some ambiguities as to the Treasurer's authorities, and we want to bring these in line with current practices that have been ongoing for some time, and also with what we have repeatedly stated to the legislature is our understanding, which has gone unquestioned, but we just want to tie it up nice and tight. The other thing is that the bill made a technically correct but imprecise reference to the Oregon short-term fund rather than the local government investment pool. And although technically correct, we do want to correct the we do want to make that reference more precise. So the bill solves those issues. These changes are important to us, as we all feel like we have a good understanding and relationship with our customers currently, but we think that that should be enshrined in statute rather than just survive on interpersonal understanding. So I ask for your support of 1535, and I'll take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? This sounds like a really boring bill.
It's very boring.
Okay.
Boring is good.
Boring is excellent. We love boring on this committee.
But then those are the ones that we make errors and omissions on.
Well, hopefully we won't be back correcting the errors and omissions on Senate Bill 1535. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing. You're the last sign-up, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1535. And committee, we are marked for work session. We have a hot off the press fiscal, so in the spirit of the Senate rules, which applies only to amendments, we will give the committee time to look at the fiscal and revenue impacts, and we will take this up again on Monday.
And Madam Chair
Rosenbaum.
So in the humorous spirit of errors and omissions, I don't know if anybody read the staff measure summary on this bill, but if you read, the first sentence says, limits the investment of local funds to statuary pool, which would sound like it would make some work for sculptors. And
it sounds like something that should be out on the mall.
Out on the mall, right.
Well, that was by not error or omission. It was by actually meant it to be, see if you could.
If we caught it.
Yes.
It was if anyone
test.
Was reading.
It was an IQ test for the committee. Well,
you passed.
You're the only one who passed. Let the record show that Senator Rosenbaum passed. Okay. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1535. And committee, if we have no further business, we are adjourned.